I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Your Booked, the podcast for literary nosy parkers. I'm Daisy Buchanan, your host, and the author of The Sisterhood, A Love Letter to the Women Who Shaped Me. It's one of the Independent's top 10 women's memoirs, and it's a tender and irreverent celebration of the connections we forge with women, viewed through the lens of my own relationship with my five adorable and infuriating little sisters. It's been described as a Nancy Mitford novel meets Fleabag. If that appeals, I think you'll like it. The Sisterhood is available from bookshops nationwide, and if you'd like to support the podcast, buying the book is the very best way for you to do that. My local stockist, the Margate Bookshop, has just opened its first physical premises. It's on 2 Margate Square, Margate, and it's well worth a visit if you can get to the Kent coast. This week, we're celebrating funny women. The Quip, that's Comedy Women in Print Prize, has just announced its shortlist. Huge congratulations to everybody on the list. We also need to send an enormous belated congratulations to a friend of the podcast and YB alumni, Nina Stibbe, who just won the Woodhouse Prize with her fantastic novel, Reasons to be Cheerful. We love Nina. And if you're not familiar with her work yet, why not start with her first book, Love, Nina? This week's guest founded Quip, and she's one of the funniest of them all. Ellen Lederer is a novelist, a comedian, a presenter, and a movie star. You might know her painfully funny, super smart novel, Losing It, a vivid and uncompromising exploration of aging, womanhood, and how to deal with life when the people you love the most exasperate you the hardest. You definitely know her as Katrina from Absolutely Fabulous. You probably didn't know that she has the most comprehensive collection of scented candles in South London. We inspected her shelves and talked about Muriel Spark, self-help gurus, and embarrassing teen diary dramas. We are right now here in South London on Helen's Landing, and Helen's house is gorgeous, and there really are books as far as I could see. We went into the hall, piles of books in the sitting room, piles of books. So this is a very handsome piece of furniture. It's not quite a sideboard or a chest of drawers, but it's that walnut. It's a lovely unofficial bookcase. And I picked up The Driver's Seat by Muriel Spark because it's open on page 11. Are you reading this at the moment?
Well, that's interesting. First of all, I must talk about my walnut item of furniture. Now, this is a weird one. Higgledy Pig, which so sums up my brain at the moment. And the door, look at the funny little walnut door. It opens, but it does fall off. And it used to be in my parents' house, as would you believe, a cocktail sort of sideboard thing. Ooh. And my memories of opening this were there were all delicious, like soda siphons and bottles of alcohol.
Oh, those lovely glass ones.
Yes, yes, all just beautiful sort of 1950s things that you're too young to remember. So then I got this, and it's a bit weird and random, and it doesn't fit with anything. But it's on the landing, as you say, because this is where I go from room to room, and the books that I'm looking at land here. So clever you
for
finding.
That's why they call it a landing, I guess.
Yeah, totally. There's a fit. And then you picked up Muriel Spark. Well, interesting about Muriel Spark, The Driver's Seat. Because there are quite sniffy reviews about this, like, you know, like people who say not one of her best or this-y, that-y, you know, and you just go, oh, that's so mean, just meanness. But it's about somebody who commits a murder, and it's quite fascinating to think about sort of madness, in quotes, and murder and comedy, because I just hold Muriel Spark up as the example, and perhaps you do, when people say, well, give an example of, you know, this ideal, witty female author. And it's just her crispness. I know we always remember Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, don't we? But I think she's, I'm sure you know other books. So I just find this is a lesser known one. And she's on an aeroplane and she manages to get through quite a lot of passengers. And it's just hilarious. You know, she sort of is moved.
Brilliant. I don't know that, but I love her economy. And what I love as well, when I think so often, when we talk about funny women, I hate when people dismiss women, like when they write about things in a domestic setting, because I think that can be funny and brilliant. But Muriel Spark is so dark, so deliciously dark.
Absolutely. And so thus far, it certainly... when one is required to sort of collect up favourite female authors from the past, let's say, or people who've influenced you growing up, or indeed just that you've read, she's always there, isn't she? There doesn't seem to be anyone, you know, as mentioned as much as Muriel Spark ever, it seems.
I also see, in sort of brilliant, funny women, I see E.M. Delafield, and C. Townsend, Leslie Thomas... I don't know. He's a chap.
That's the male Leslie Thomas. Now, that is an example. It's a bit of work I was doing, you see, now. I was making this comparison between those people who wrote in the 70s. So Muriel Spark, she spanned, you know, decades, as you know. But there was this book, the Driver's Seat, and Leslie Thomas, Tropic of Rye Slip. So were written at the same time. So I was trying to do this clever clogs, but slightly clunky comparison. And I started to read it. And in those days, it's the kind of book that might have been on my mother's bedside table, possibly. I don't know. I could be doing her a great disservice. But it's a parody about suburbia. And so, again, it's just interesting looking at genres and, you know, even other writers of that kind, Kingsley Amis at the time, you know, very sexist in our in today's terms. And it's just it's just a piece of interest. Very, very very, very sexual when you read that. And then actually it becomes quite humble and quite self-effacing, but just a very different style. So it's just fascinating as an exercise, actually.
I just opened it up on page 49. Her cascading fair hair tumbled over the grass, her forehead touched by the sun, the green material of her dress pushed up by her gorgeous breasts, then dipping to her flattened lower body.
That's such a
male gaze.
There's a lot of breasts in there, a huge amount of breast references from the word go, which I find fascinating in itself about when things were written. But then it was a very successful book. I mean, Tropic of Rye Slip was very, very well known at the time. So you just think how times have changed. Mm. And obviously there's a bit more to it apart from just a man ogling a pair of breasts, if that's what they did in those days.
I'm sure there's some ogling.
I'm not defending it.
Well, let's talk about E.M. Delafield. Are you a fan? I love this edition. This is a Penguin new. Modern Classic, and it's got a very elegant picture on the front of a sort of... It's like if they made a film and Keira Knightley... played her, yes. I think. It's got this lovely kind of great
green
sofa.
Green dress.
Because of Atonement that I thought that, I think.
Yes,
the famous.
You're so right.
So when did you first read this?
Well, it looks like a virgin book, so that's a very polite question. Obviously, it has not been thumbed. Again, I was looking at that as an example of witty writing, and it is so gorgeous. So if you think about sort of Bridget Jones, which I adored, and we all know it started in the Independent as a column, so that's interesting in itself, isn't it? The understatement, there's some great lines in there.
I'd love for you to read a bit if you've got a bit that you like. Are you up for that?
Yep, I'd just have to find one. Maybe I should just not even find it. Shall I just open the page?
Copyright.
Okay, I'm just literally opening it at a page, so there's no agenda. July the 12th, pay farewell calls and receive much good advice. Our vicar says that it is madness to drink water anywhere in France unless previously boiled and filtered. Our vicar's wife shares Robert's distrust as to climate and advises Jaeger next as the skin and also offers loan of small travelling medicine chests for emergencies. Discussion follows as to whether Bishop Fate of Quinn is or is not dutiable, I don't know that word, article, I'm lost there, and is finally brought to inconclusive conclusion by our vicar's pronouncing, definitely, in any case, honesty is the best policy. Well, that may not have been the best example, but you can see that understatement and agenda is rife in the narrative, as you already cleverly got, and I adore it. And it was written, what, in the 30s? So you've got clever women, we're doing all this stuff already.
You are an extremely funny, clever woman. Well, what makes you laugh? What's the first thing you remember really, really laughing at?
Well, interestingly, when I get asked that, this is my answer, but I had a couple of gins with a very nice friend of mine last night, and I now feel I should change it. So my version of what makes me laugh, right, is when somebody falls over and then they pretend they haven't. Because I find that sums up my life, falling over, obviously, and then just pretending you haven't. Because social situations and, like, because I say what's in my mind and then I can see the disaster that I can cause, the people's alarm, you know. But anyway, my lovely friend yesterday was talking about another person. She said, and she laughs at, you know, the kind of things like when someone falls over. And I didn't say anything because I thought, oh no, that I would. But but actually that sums up where we're coming from always. And humour is always about who we are, what mood we're in, our disposition, just a thousand things, and our DNA. Do you not think?
Right, it's vulnerability and pomposity, mm-hmm. isn't it? Us always, I think, trying to maintain this image of ourselves while knowing deep down that we're not. Mm. We're just shambling bundles of chaos.
I would say that. But then authenticity is really important. So I absolutely agree. But then we need to learn how to claim what we can do, but also be honest about our foibles. Mm. I don't like it when I feel people are putting it on because they feel that that's a genre, let's say, in writing, although good on them for earning a living. So I'm not entirely contradicting myself. But for me personally, to the origin of the question is what makes me laugh is authenticity. So I kind of, if there's a barrier, I get annoyed. Mm. Deep down, there's so much anger in me that I get very cross when I feel that people aren't being honest.
I think a lot of it is when it's people, the detail is really, really specific as well, because you know that has to be observed from something real, from someone. And I think that's what Diary of a Provincial Lady does.
Yeah. In a better section. Sorry about the section.
I enjoyed the medicine chest. Yes. I thought it was great.
No, one word. Anyway,
what sort of reader were you when you were little? Did you like books? Did you feel like books were something you had to endure?
I liked Enid Blyton. I think I probably have that in common with quite a lot of people. And my thing was eating nougat at the same time as, well, reading a Bunty comic. That started my passion. I devoured the Four Marys, which I think was in Bunty, these four amazing, powerful characters in a cartoon strip. And I just remember being obsessional and excited about going up to the newsagent and getting my Bunty comic and my nougat.
Did you have a favourite Full Mary? Was there one that you sort of really connected
good
with?
Good question. No, I can just picture them all. Well, one was tall and sort of authoritative. No, I can't remember. That's a very good question.
That's right. Was Mary Field sporty? There was Mary, I think, Radley or Radley, who's quite posh. Oh. There's Mary Simpson, who I think was a scholarship girl, because there always had to be one. And I cannot remember.
Two others.
I want to say Mary Crawford, but I think that's Jane Austen.
That's feeling right. Your names are correct. Feeling correct.
I've got
Simpson and the first one, the sporty one?
Field, Simpson, Radley Raleigh.
I would accept Crawford as a contender. And then maybe Smith. Maybe someone who just got in through the back door.
That's what we'll think of a better short name later.
Who was short and not very sporty. That would be me. But that was great. Enid Blyton, great. Noel Stretfield, gorgeous.
Oh, was it?
Love, love, love.
Was there any Noel Stretfield that made you want to act, did that spark it off, or did that exist long before?
No,
you
the
came
acting
across her?
Started when I knew I had to do something like that I'm doing now when I was 10, and I was writing. I wrote a play, quite a bad play when I was 10, but I wrote a sketch show that was funnier. And then the play came second, and that was not received well. So that was the beginning of my peaking then failing.
Did you put these on?
Yeah, at school and then also at home. So that at school, I wanted to be David Frost. Mm. So I did my sketch show that everyone was a success. And then they asked me to write a play for the open day and it wasn't good. And it was just that whole dynamic of huge responsibility, huge expectation and me blowing it. And I do find that a very familiar pattern in my life. Or I just remember the failures more than the kind of... I'm not complacent. I don't like thinking of success and I don't like waiting for people to clap.
That's a really big thing when you're 10, because writing a play when you're 10 is a big deal. Having the play performed is a big deal. But to think at the age of 10, because obviously it, I imagine, would have some elements of triumph and disaster because you were a child. But to hold that in your head as an example of failure, that makes me really sad.
I know that I think I am quite sad. But it's a mix, isn't it, of like being the person you are in that form, like how you were. I would say this, I bet we can all remember, if we went to one of those friends reunited things now, God forbid, but we would be the same with our peer group as we were then, I think, largely. Yeah. So were you popular? Were you bullied?
No.
Weird.
The joke I always make, I always say I was very badly bullied. Well, actually, I was quite efficiently bullied.
Efficiently.
They did their job. So they were not bad at bullying. They were successful bullies.
I see the play on words there. But so you were bullied. Why? Were you fat?
Yes.
Or thin? Oh, okay.
I was fat and I was a nerd. I was quite academic. My family were quite academic and my sister all sort of very bright. So I enjoyed that and I always loved writing and making things up. Mm. But, you know, it was a bad combination to be. And
fat
to be honest,
nerd.
I look back and I really wasn't, all things considered, when you, I don't want to be, you know, it's difficult for everybody, but when you sort of, whenever there's like a news story about obese children, I'm like, I wasn't that fat.
No.
But I really felt
it. No, and it's good to just own it. I don't know why. Well, I was fat because I had asthma and I had to take steroid injections at the time that kept me moon-faced and fat. But also I ate a lot of nougat, and also being, we had a lot of cake at home. And in those days, I mean, you'd come home from school, I don't mean you, and you'd have tea on the table. You'd have tea with bread and butter and cake. Then you'd have supper. You'd have loads of food.
I think about this a lot because of the kind of, oh, you know, it's terrible and we all eat far too much and we must stop. So I see P.G. Woodhouse.
Yeah.
One of the things I love so much about a P.G. Woodhouse book is they're constantly, constantly eating.
Eating
there will be a really, like, they'll have a full breakfast and then sort of 11s is, it's not a biscuit, they sit down to cheese on toast and then there's a vast spread for lunch and then a proper, you know, sandwiches about 4 o'clock and then a full on many course dinner.
But how lovely to be connected up by meals, because it means that people are sitting together, you know, and they even have to have programmes now about how to teach people how to sit together. And I'm really guilty of that because as a single parent, when I was, I remember Hannah and my daughter, we would be sitting on the floor watching Spot the Dog, probably eating with our fingers. I mean, I'm sorry, you know, that's probably bad and roundabout. But
if you're together and if you remember it and if she remembers it and you're happy.
Lonely times. No, but I just think there are many ways to connect with people and I rebel against the kind of tyranny of having to be formal.
I think... so very fondly, I think, was it last year we went for lunch? I say lunch, I couldn't tell you what we ate. I know there was masses of vodka.
Oh, you and me.
And we were there for about 8 hours.
Yes, we were.
Do you remember?
I'll tell you why, because I'd been given tokens for that club. And you were the lucky recipient of some of the tokens.
Lucky.
But I think we actually hoovered up those tokens and beyond. But there is something very nice, almost, well, always, I would say, wrong word. There's something very nice about meeting someone new and then getting to know them. I'm addicted to that. I like new people because we live in a world where I don't live in a rural community where there are habits and repetitions of social groups, which is great and I think really worthwhile and important, but I am not that person. So I get high on connecting with other humans and my hopes are always high when I meet a new human and I get so excited that I might make them laugh and they might make me laugh. And I'm always seeking that, and I celebrate the newness of people as I go, as I get older and older and older.
I think it's quite romantic. I think that lots of people are really hooked on that initial first sort of flush of relationships, and it's a way of, it's friend romances, isn't it? Yeah. And it's a kind of flirting, I think. It's lovely.
Yes, and sort of not consciously sexual in my way, but in my department, but I could...
Maybe in yours,
but no, because I'm so closed to all that. Hence reading. My literature gives me everything. I think that somebody said I collect people, and it sounds a bit sort of flighty and superficial, but it's just that I don't let those people go. They just join, like the Pied Piper, they just join into the canvas, and that's about life. We only got so long alive, haven't we? So we might as well be open to new friendships.
If you could pick a character that you've read who you'd love to be your new friend, someone you'd love to take for lunch, long boozy lunch, who would you take?
Okay, a good one. Well, that hidden here, and I took this when I was touring a show, I think about 15 years ago, and I really struggled with my nerves a lot, which I less now, because I do different kinds of gigs. I don't do the frightening ones. Feel the fear and do it anyway. Now, alas, the Susan Jeffers, I always used to call her Jeffers, she's not Jeffers, I've just seen the correct name, gosh, from the first time, is alas dead. But this is a great handbook, and I would like to take her to lunch on my tokens, should she be alive, because I like someone who's been there, done it, great title, says it all. You know that thing says on the tin, la la, well, it does. So she'd be good. And then in terms of another author, I really enjoyed this book, When We Were Bad, by Charlotte Mendelssohn. She is very witty, quite dark. And I think I had to read this when I was a judge for something, but I came across it and I thought, what a great, stunning novel. And maybe sometimes meeting the author might be a disappointment, though, as well. I just like dark, spicy women, you know. And when I mean spicy, I mean, you know, like not afraid of going to the very dark, unpleasant side, which is therefore funny.
I think you have to be. I really loved, in Losing It, that there is so much of that about the sort of that... And what I loved as well, what I thought was brilliant about Losing It, was all of those conversations with people who were just refusing to understand each other. I thought that seemed so authentic to me.
I'm glad you got that. But that is about, I suppose, when you're writing in the third person, so it wasn't written in the first person, you kind of need to kind of create the vibe so that you need to explain social awkwardness. So it's what people don't say. Mm. And what you're saying is that disconnect is so rife. Like one person will say something and then the other person doesn't reply, or then they might reply later when something else has said something else. And that is the sort of music of how none of us understand each other at all. It's quite lonely, but hilarious.
It is hilarious. And again, it's that, you know, to be funny, it has to be, I think, exploring an unpleasant truth.
Yeah, unpleasant truth. And then maybe the job of a comedy writer, as you yourself are, a very good one, is to, and it sounds a bit, not at all, and it might sound a bit pretentious, but it does unite us. So that is the purpose of it, I think. Somehow to desire to read more of unpleasantness means that it's making us feel better about unpleasantness. And that at least is a nice function.
Definitely. When you've been acting and working and, you know, doing lots of travelling and lots of kind of waiting to go on, did you sort of read much backstage, or did you find that your nerves couldn't take it?
Well, I've heard that, is it the musical woman, Ellen Terry? I could be wrong, but she had sex before she went on. Or was it Mary Lloyd? One of them has a great sort of diffuser of anxiety, was to have sex before you go on stage.
With a particular person, or anyone who's available?
Don't know the details. But that's not occurred to me live in a theatre situation, just for the sheer lack of availability and the inconvenience, probably. But I just, my nerves... I wouldn't be concentrating on a book to read a novel. I couldn't go into another place. But my handbook, Feel the Fear, or any of those, there's another one, The Power. Anything where I can get my... Like in Edinburgh when I was doing my shows this summer, just to get myself into a very positive state of just thinking good thoughts about myself and the audience, that's what I tried to do. I'm not saying I succeeded, but there's an awful lot of head work to be done. You can't just sort of turn up and look normal, because it's a very odd thing to do.
Yeah, it's real, but also, but part of the challenge, I guess, is convincing the audience that it's not odd, that it is a natural thing.
Yes, and that you want to talk to that group of people, even though you've never met them before. And that's fine in the world that you and I sometimes envelop, you know, in this the literary world, where already your audience is disposed to listen to what you have to say. They've chosen to come to listen to that and booky stuff, which is great. But going back to the days of stand-up, when it was more selection, gladiatorial, it was normal to be harsh, then obviously that you couldn't just wander on and expect people to be vaguely interested in something you might have written once. You've actually got to give them content, as you know.
As well, a lot of the time it's like people are there because there's a bar in there. So the only thing people have got in common is a fondness for alcohol.
Yeah, fondness for alcohol, but also an enjoyment at seeing people fail because it makes them feel better. A huge level of criticism. The moment anyone walks on the stage, they're going to be assessing them, their vibe, their clothes. You know, it was a harsh time, particularly, you know, women were so it was so unusual for women, then obviously they had their own scrutiny. I think it was mentally derailing for me, and it was lovely when I didn't do it, but then of course I regretted stopping because I see how brilliant everyone else, you know, continued to be brilliant, and I thought, oh no, I've stepped out. But it wasn't good for me, so I'm glad I stepped out.
And it sounds like one of those really intense relationships where it's that person you can live neither with nor without.
Yes, because there's an element of the fact that I think I can do it because I have done it. And that's why I went back to it this summer, just to see if I could do it. But I didn't have a plan after that, because, of course, now it's so organised. You have to have a tour, an agent, promoter. So then I'm thinking, oh, why did I do that? But I think I did it just to be a bit sharper, a little bit sharper. So I'm a little bit sharper, I think, today from doing that show.
It's really good for your writing.
Writing, as you know yourself, because you write loads, Daisy, it's a repetition of writing that makes you get better. Because I look at stuff, as trying to pitch something, expecting some rejection emails any minute, and I looked at something I'd written 10 years ago, and it's so different. You must find this. The person who was writing 10 years ago is not now. And actually, novelists don't tend to read their novels of before, do they? There's something, it's a different person that wrote then.
And I think it's weird, isn't it? Because you know, you can see how the sausage has been made.
Yes. And by that you mean you don't feel connected, or you feel it, you see the craft of it? Or
yeah, I think that when, because I love reading so much, and it's, you know, if you're really, really, really connecting with a book, it's pure joy and you can absolutely be in that universe. But it's, I think sometimes reading your own writing, you know, you can sort of see where the paint doesn't quite go all the way around the back.
Gosh,
and,
yes,
you know, the colours were, and you can sort of see where the splinters are and what's wonky. And it's very hard. You can't lose yourself in the universe that you've created, I think, unless you are actually in the act of writing, possibly.
Well,
some people might disagree with that.
To take that point about when you're reading your own stuff back and you can see the disjoint and disconnect and all that, is more painful if it is you that's written it, because then you would be very self-critical, and it's like you go, oh, what a twat, you know, oh my God, did you really think, you know, you'd be really doubly harsh. Whereas if we picked up a novel that was written 10 years ago, well, that's a different point, isn't it? You know, we can enjoy when it was written and all the influences 10 years ago. But I did a programme where you had to do your teenage diaries, and I keep all my diaries. And it was a bit of a gift, because I actually kept them all. Then I remembered all the pain of growing up. It was all about boys, and it was totally authentic. So I actually loved that sort of 14-year-old, 12-year-old person writing it. So it's quite interesting going back, isn't it?
Can we? Oh, is that a Melody Maker diary from 1969?
Wow.
Nice.
That is amazing.
And look at your tiny writing.
This is a tiny writing, and this is all about boys and people in my school. Like, get up, go to church, quite good. Susanna, come to lunch. Go when David arrive. Obviously, you need to know the characters for it to connect. But here's a poem. Do you want me to read it?
Yes, please.
It's called 18 of the 3rd, 69. It's called A Soppy Piece of Writing. The whole page has been crossed out, and then I've written, oh, God, at the top with two exclamation marks. The dawn crept up on us and played with the flimsy curtains, drifting and blowing in the breeze, looking back on the friendly moon that was kind to us last night. It didn't seem to mind us watching it, but it wasn't watching us. It turned totally away. Fine. Anyway, I should put that melody maker back in its box, quite literally.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed that very much.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
We'll be back to Helen soon, but now it's time for my Steal of the Week, a book so valuable that if you claimed it on your contents insurance, your provider would roll their eyes and demand to see a receipt. This week, it's The Pisces by Melissa Broder. Lucy is in exile in Venice Beach, LA, having disgraced herself at the end of a breakup with an emotionally unavailable man. Lucy finds relief through the usual channels, Tinder dates, group therapy, shopping trips, but things get seriously weird and very sexy when she meets a mysterious swimmer on the rocks. If you'll permit a clunky metaphor, this book is a lot like the ocean it's set beside. The shallows are warm and fun, the depths are unexpected and take your breath away. It's uncompromisingly funny, defiantly explicit, and it will carry you away. An extremely stylish beach read in the literal sense. If you do read it on the beach, you might need a big sun hat to cover your blushes. I adored it. That's The Pisces by Melissa Broder, published by Bloomsbury. Now, back to Helen.
It's funny.
Should we have a look at the books on the other case? What? Here. Oh, the book that jumps out to me because it's such a brilliant title is Annabelle Gurwitch's I See You Made an Effort. I don't know that book.
I don't know that book. I just was interested in, that's an interesting title, and that, because that title says something else, doesn't it? So that's nice.
Absolutely not what you'd expect to see in a bookshop, so it does leave out. Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, it's another book.
That's some sound of...
Then you think you might know what the, it might be a bit of a waspish kind of seminal thing about middle age.
Compliments, indicatives and survival stories from the edge of 50. So is it short stories or
essays? I haven't read it.
So we don't...
But I did this, I was just interested in looking at books. What was the genre where you talk about being middle aged? And you don't have to worry about that yet, Daisy. Lucky you.
Well, it'll come for all of it. It's a I should be so lucky.
No, yes, be grateful.
Actress and humorist Annabelle Gurwitch returns with I See You Made an Effort. Whether she is falling in lust at the Genius Bar, navigating the extensive and treacherously expensive anti-aging offerings at the Department Store Beauty Counter, or coping with the assisted suicide of her best friend.
Oh, Lord. I think that might be
her prime.
That might be better than the content. I don't know, because I can't vouchsafe the content. Sometimes reading this strapline.
It's making me want to read it.
Good.
Can I borrow
that? You can borrow that. Yeah, of course you can.
Um,
Those are weird things.
Do you have any books that you read to your daughter when she was little?
Yeah, they're in another... I was trying to find those. I remember going back to when we were talking about Noel Stratfield. Do you say Stratfield or Stratfield?
I see you say Stratfield, okay, I think. But I never know. If someone were to say...
Well, we're not on Radio 4, luckily, so we can say it. So I remember the first one was The Circus Is Coming. Can you remember that? And I can remember the cover with the balloons and like a tent. And I was trying to find it the other day because that book, it was my copy and I would have read that to her. I can't remember. Do you know what? My memory is shot to pieces. But this has probably got more... like free books you get at book launches. Like it got given Thrive by Arianna Huffington Person. I haven't read that, but I'm sure it's very good.
Well, I imagine that might be, you know, in the same sort of feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah,
although is she like an heiress billionaire?
I'm not sure, but I remember she got to a point in her life where she had burnout. So that was what interested me. And I went along, obviously I go along to these things. Actually, it was at number 11... Downing Street when Osborne was Chancellor.
Oh.
And I swear he recognised me, I'd like to think.
Sure you would have done.
And I left my phone there and they had to bike it back in a special Jiffy envelope. Because you have to put your phone... Yeah, you have to put your phones in, don't you, when you... You know, like an everyday occurrence at Downing Street. So I didn't know.
But, I'm there all the time.
I tell you, this is a funny author, Laurie Graham.
I love Laurie Graham.
Yes.
I've not read that. That's Life One. According to Lovecraft.
Yeah. She was ahead of her time in terms of witty female writing, would you say?
Definitely.
Yeah.
The ones I really, really loved of hers are Mr. Starlight, about the Liberace-esque story.
Okay.
And there's one...
Cooking one? Something about cooking.
I have a vague memory. Is that the one where it's the man having an affair and it's the 60s and it's sort of the exotic neighbour who they eat a lot of mango?
You do have a photographic, among other...
Helen, for all I know, that's like eight books I've amalgamated. But there's the Wallace Simpson one of hers I really love.
Okay, so no, you beat me. I'd like to think that I read a lot of hers, but I haven't. So, but I do love her as an author. But we've got more self-help here. So there's not. We've got The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle, but I couldn't get beyond.
What I love so much is that The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle is next to Can't and Won't by Lydia Davis.
Yes, and those are a collection. There was a present for me by a lovely poet, John Hegley. And he, I think they're short stories. And
the producer, Dale, is a big fan of Lydia Davis.
Oh, right. So again, I've got some lovely, lovely authors here. I just wish I'd read them.
But they're here for you. They're waiting for you when you're ready.
And, oh, yes.
Oh, wow.
This one. So this, you would enjoy this. She's laughing loudly.
What I love so much is it's called Coping with Helen Ledger. Is it Coping with Helen Ledger or Coping with Helen Ledger?
Well, we don't know. That's why I am a stickler for titles. But this is, again, I feel I was ahead of my time.
Look,
I would say that.
Sexy, sexy picture of you.
So there's me holding a tray of Weetabix, because there was a book at the time by Jane Asher called Easy Entertaining with Jane Asher, bless her. So this was a slight parody. So
this appears to be Weetabix on a bed of tomato puree fried by Monge too.
Yeah, ahead of my time, because I swear I saw somebody use a similar image somewhere. I try and be gracious about my ideas being taken by other people. But when I'm in a defensive mood, as today, I want to kind of be really mean and just go, my idea, me, I was there first. But then you can't have a monopoly on ideas, can you? But this book is like social skills, holidays, choosing a companion, do you need therapy, depression, how to overcome depression. I have prepared a few dishes that I find effective antidotes to depression. Oh, I'm suggesting guacamole dip. And
With croutons.
And then how to cope in the rare event of people not liking you very much. And then I've got, that's my friend John Hegley, very kindly came round for the photo shoot in my flat in Finsbury Park. And, oh, it was such fun doing that book and this doing the photos and getting people. And then this is about, I do a thing called seduction. I talk about bed valance.
Pictures are brilliant.
And I do like Helen. I'm glad you. He says, man says, I like a well-dressed bed. Helen, do you think the colour is all right? Man, oh yes, a good volant should complement the undersheet and contrast with a duvet. Not entirely riveting.
Somebody very, very.
Jonathan Swift, I'd like to say, but that's just it's very pretentious. I didn't know that. Somebody said that afterwards. I had no idea. Street cred, traffic jams. Holding your own in conversation. So I did that in the 80s, and I'm sure many, many people have copied me since. Oh, I can't believe I just said that. That's how I'm feeling today. Bitter, twisted, ungenerous, and copy me at your peril, Daisy. You don't need to. You're very, very original in your own right, she said quickly.
I want to rip this off. This is brilliant. This is gold.
No ripping off.
I'm just going to read the first bit about looking Go after on. Your money, because you wrote an article about money management and financial disasters. Yeah. And I just, that was something that I thought was so brilliant and so specific, because I am a financial disaster.
Yes.
And nothing gives me the fear like money.
Yeah, money.
I'm talking about
scary.
Money. Examining your bank statement can raise some interesting questions. How is it that I managed to spend £300 on the 7th of March when I didn't even leave the house that day? How did I manage to spend £259 at John Lewis when I only spent 3 minutes in there sheltering from the rain? I've often suspected there is someone, possibly in a parallel universe, who is spending the money in my account.
That was before the internet, I have to say. This was like in the 80s when I think I might have had the first, was it called a computer where you type on it, but there was no internet where you can buy things now online.
Dear bank manager, I know from your last letter that you feel I've not yet realised my growth potential and that you find it difficult to justify my expenditure in the following areas. Honey from Wales, £37.50.
Oh, this
has
so
to
good.
Be done.
Oh, bless you. I'm glad you like it. In fact, I hadn't, you reading it, when we talked earlier about reading our stuff before, that's actually not bad, is it, Daisy?
Great.
It's not bad.
And it's interesting as well, because it's, so this was,
I mean, that's
written in 1988, so this is 30?
Oh, was it 98?
88,
Oh, 88, yeah,
but
88.
It's not aged. Oh, I want to read, can we just, we need to stop the podcast
it.
So I can read this, the bit on people not liking it. Oh.
Yeah, because.
Do you have any more of these?
Yeah, but you can't copy it. So I'm going
to
get a certificate.
Read,
you're going to sign a disclaimer before you leave my library that you are not taking any of the words in that book. I think I'm just, I love you for me being able to say that to you and you laugh, because a lot of people, you couldn't get away with saying that, could you? Because they go, ooh, bitter, which of course I am.
It's funny, I think, that in that sort of the comedy world, I guess, this idea that, once you're professionally funny, I'm not saying this about you at all, but it sounds like from what you're saying, the people in that world are like, you're not going to give it away. There's a lack of sort of exuberance and, you know, general light chat. You're like, I will be funny for these hours and I will invoice for it.
Yeah.
And then we can't be silly.
I think the world now is very, very different. I mean, we can tie all these thoughts up with thinking, my joy is connecting with other women who are funny. That is my absolute joy. I'll go for lunch with them, as you and I have witnessed, experienced.
I'll remember nothing.
Exactly. So I seek that connection. So it's not like I don't want to be entertained or touched by the people's humour. But there's still that regard and respect for colleagues' work and boundaries that should and has always existed amongst fellow colleagues, don't you think? And when you get plundered, that is hard. And I think that'd be hard for any of us. You know, you don't see two Picassos, do you?
No. I think,
or maybe
as well,
he was just the one successful one who made it. I don't know.
There was an original Picasso who was great, and the other Picasso kind of like bumped him off. He threw him over the side of a boat and was like, I have
these. Is that true, or was that a flight of fancy?
No, that's me inventing.
Get it.
I was going to say expectorating. Well, that's spitting, isn't it? I'm not going to spit in your house.
No, don't spit in my house near the books anyway. I have to get a duster.
Well, I'm going to not stealing this, but I want to take a picture of it.
My other half sometimes says, we really should get rid of the books. What? You're not ever getting rid of my books. And downstairs are all the books that I took from my parents' house. And I just know the look of them. So they will never go. They are staying with me.
Can we have a look at those?
Yep.
Thank you.
We'll go downstairs.
Because
they're all... Oh, just leave it. I like things being higgledy. I don't need order. Okay. Shall we go to see the parents' books?
I'd love to see the parents' books.
Okay. We'll do that. Oh, in fact, if you go here in the dark room, these are the books probably that are just a lot of the stored ones. Those ones are the Czech, German books that obviously we're not going to understand from my father and grandmother. And then in here, we've got the posh show-off books that rarely get taken out.
So like in the beautiful sitting room.
I'd do my jumping up on a trampoline there. I've only done it twice. Apparently that's what you have to do to cure depression.
You only jumped up and down and up twice. And down and went, no more trampoline.
I did 100. But these books will be books that people send. You must get sent lots of books. Oh, there's Enid Blyton.
Ooh.
So I must have been doing that. That was...
In the Fifth at Mallory Towers.
Yeah, and it's
my dad's favourite. Is that the one with the pantomime?
It may well have been at the end as probably part of the resolution when everyone comes together. I don't know, I'm guessing. But this is its original, one of its original. You know, they've republished.
So is that...
So I think this is an original from a charity shop.
That looks a bit 70s, do we think?
Yeah, I love maybe.
I'm just going to describe the cover because I'm going to paint a picture with words. So this looks like lacrosse. It looks quite violent lacrosse. There's lots of bashing of sticks. We've got four girls. I'm assuming one of them must be Daryl. And they're in stripy...
Daryl is in the foreground. I love Daryl. What a lovely, open, nice, kind face she has. I like her. Do you not like her as much as I like her?
I've never quite forgiven her for... she hit Sally in the music room. Oh, they made it up.
Yeah.
But then, did she drown Mary Lou in the pool for being a bit wet?
She had a problem with her temper. She had anger management issues. But the good thing is she owned them. And then came good. So it is important to have weakness.
It's interesting, I think, in Enid Blyton's world... smacking people semi-regularly is much less of a sin than being quote-unquote a bit wet.
Yes, absolutely.
She's got no time for people who struggle with confidence.
No, she was feisty. So then these I do remember this book, being given this book, Confessions of an Actor. That was probably my first...
Oh, Laurence Olivier.
Sort of my first grown-up biography about a famous actor.
That is beautiful edition. When did you read this?
Oh, a long time ago. I remember... lived at home.
Like a teenager?
Yeah. I think it might have been given to me by my father. So it kind of, you know, like special. Because like saying, oh, we know you're interested in that kind of thing. So here's a book for you. That's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
I think it's really powerful. When you're that age and you don't have that much stuff that's of your own.
Yeah.
And to have someone seeing what's individual and what's special about you. I think that's huge.
And then we just got, loads and loads of wine books that I just stored because they look nice. Because I'm a bit of an amateur. I have an interest in wine. I had a column a few years, probably 10 longer years ago. So then I got getting books to understand about wine more.
This is you here.
Oh, that was another book I wrote.
Single Minding on Lone Parenting.
Now, they look staged because they're here, but this was for a photo shoot. I promise you that I don't come in this room that often. And we put the books that I'd written for a photograph.
Have a breakdown, a coffee morning. I love the illustrations.
Yeah, I was asked to do that by Hodra after a one-woman show I'd done when I was newly divorced. And I suppose there's a picture of Hannah there, so she must have been about 2.
Oh, wow.
Very unfashionable. Nobody wrote books like that.
What does Hannah think about this?
I don't think she thinks much of it. She just
How does
on.
She feel about having having her? How old was she there?
2. I think she just...
She is adorable. Both are.
Two-year-olds are adorable, whoever. But I think her thing would be she's finding she's who she is, so she's not like us. So that's probably a very good thing to be completely different from your parents in what you do, I think is good. Although doctors run in families, so there's nothing wrong with that. Even comedians, not in this family. So they're just like big, you know, books that look good in photographs, this bit now. I'm a bit ashamed of
one
these.
One big book I'm excited about. I see The Best of Jackie.
Oh, that was a Christmas present.
Lovely.
This was a Christmas present from my school friend who... obviously, again, you know, nostalgia. They reissue this, so this is not.
Who are these?
This would be your era, not mine. Donny Osmond, David Cassidy. That wasn't David Cassidy, maybe. So I haven't gone through this in detail yet.
Oh, is there a quiz? But what's your real age?
So is this Kathy and Claire the proper play? Oh yeah, I do remember Kathy and Claire helping us through our sort of problems with boys and that.
Are you game for anything?
Yeah. And what's your
favorite? What are you saying, Jackie Magazine?
Legs. Keep the high heel boots. Too fat? Oh, that's another category. Wow. Solid, heavy legs. There's some advice for you. Avoid little shoes. Skirt just in italics below knee. This
I
is helpful.
Like now, you just would not have that in a magazine for teenagers. No. You know, saying like, this is... Because, you know, also, I've read old Jackie. Because you know why my first ever job was at Bliss magazine? So that's where
for
I
young
learned
people.
Journalism.
Yes.
Yeah, which was, I suppose, the Jackie...
Hannah would have read
day.
That. Yes.
Women's magazines really, really used to be quite, here is what is wrong with you. Yeah. Here's how you fix
Lovely.
It. You know, that's, I remember kind of when I was 8, I knew that like, you must never wear horizontal stripes. Yeah. That, you know, nuclear war would be triggered if you were.
I agree with you.
Not as slim as you'd like to be and you wore horizontal stripes.
We have a different representation of the same thing though, because there are still those photographs of A-listers where somebody ticks them or puts a cross. They either go, that coat worked and that coat didn't. So we still have huge judgment, I suppose.
Have
it's
you
just
had that?
Different.
Have you been in...
No.
You've been
not
hooked.
Me. I only wear the same black clothes to every event. I probably got, the same jacket and just has to be dry cleaned every so often. So my thing is not clothes anymore or not clothes that would be commented on. That's an art in itself.
I think you want people to remember you and not your clothes.
And also, I don't feel particularly confident. I mean, occasionally I've had to get, you know, they say bright colours for a shoot or something if you're promoting something or whatever. And
heel if it's in the Daily Mail.
And it's so depressing because then a perfectly nice wardrobe person will come along and they're used to people being happy about being given borrowed clothes for a shoot. My heart sinks. I go, it's not going to do up. It's not going to work. I hate that colour. And that I just feel like I'm an imposter. So I do have a very extreme sense of don't dress me.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think it's, it's a bit of control
things.
Being taken away.
Yeah.
And because it's quite a vulnerable thing, I think, to have your picture taken and you want to be in as much control as you can be.
Totally.
And so you'll be like, well, I'd never wear this.
I know. And I tell them, look, I have a very broad trunk. It's not going to fit. And then the humiliation of them bringing a really big size and that not doing up. So the whole thing is very exposing.
I just read, I'm a really big fan of the comedian and podcaster Sophie Hagen, who's a lovely woman. And she's written a gorgeous book. And I will find out and I'll put it in the notes because I think the book's coming out this summer. I cannot remember what it's bloody called, but it's great. And she's writing. She identifies and defines as a fat woman. And she's talking about how sizist the world is in really sort of insidious ways, but she, because she's Danish, and I think it was a Danish TV show she was on, and she said to the stylist, and she said to the stylist, look, there are 3 shops that will do clothes my size, here they are, you need to go online, you need to get quite far in advance, it'll take ages. And the stylist was like, no, it's my job, I'll find you loads of things. And then the stylist came later looking totally defeated, and she had like, here is a big black t-shirt, and it was just...
Have it. No, I can see that. I can see that we know ourselves, but the other person is doing their job, and everybody has to do their job, and there is not a connection. But you're right, when you earlier said it's about control, so I should have to look at that. If it's a part I'm wearing, like I've had to do a children's series where I had to be on a tricycle a lot of the time, and I said, please, I beg, not trousers. And of course, it was brown corduroy trousers, wasn't it? With a belt and a cravat. I've played a character called Miss Bowline Hitch in a children's series. But every day I would put these items on that was the most unflattering in the world. But you go, this is Miss Bowline Hitch. So you have to... You know, you've got to be cool when you're an actor. You go, fine, yes, I'm not difficult. Just put me in a load of shit. I'll wear it. But when it's you, it's very different.
Huge thanks to Helen. Follow her and share your love at Helen Lederer on social media. The Quip winners will be announced on July 10th. There is a prize for unpublished authors, so listen and you might discover your brand new favourite writer. I'm Daisy Buchanan and I've been your book inspector. Thank you so much for joining me, fellow bookshelf botherers. You can find me on Twitter at NotRollerGirl and on Instagram at TheDaisyB. Say hello, suggest some guests and watch out for shelfies. Visit our show page, acast.com/booked, for more information about our guest and a list of the books they've talked about. If you have any other queries about the podcast, email us at ybooked@gmail.com.
Your Booked is produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska and hosted by Acast. Please do subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. It's great to hear what you think, and it helps other people to find the podcast. I'll see you next time. For now, I leave you with some words from Frances Hodgson Burnett, as observed by Sarah from The Little Princess. Never did she find anything so difficult as to keep herself from losing her temper when she was suddenly disturbed while absorbed in a book. People who are fond of books know the feeling of irritation which sweeps over them at such a moment. The temptation to be unreasonable and snappish is one not easy to manage.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.